today as we come to the table.
I think a lot of times people hate Christians and they don't even know why. It's a spiritual thing. You know, we see this with the nation of Israel. There are people today that hate the Jews and they don't know why. Now, there are some that can make an argument in the Middle East. We don't like them because fill in the blank, right? And people can offend each other and wrong each other and all that. But there's this thing where now there's people today that just hate the Jews for no reason. Why? Notice this. It is spiritual. You need to recognize the spiritual realm. And whenever you see things happening that don't make sense and are unreasonable, you know that the enemy's involved. And so here the enemy's involved in this. And so they call him that Daniel, who is one of the captives from Judah.
In the study today, we find Daniel hated by the heathen world around him. There's always been a sense of animosity toward God and his people. It's spiritual blindness. There are people who hate Christians and don't even know why. It's an evil that spews hatred without reason. It's similar to the hatred of Jews. Well, thanks for staying with us today as we come to the table, the daily Bible study program of Pastor Mark Kirk of Calvary Knoxville. In today's message, Pastor Mark encourages us to recognize the spiritual realm and the falsehoods it spreads. Anytime we see something that is not logical or reasonable, recognize that the enemy is involved. The world hates believers. The unbelievers' hearts are filled with untruths, so do not seek wisdom from them. Let's join Pastor Mark in the book of Daniel, chapter 6, with today's edition of Come to the Table.
There's a fear of man that oftentimes crops up, and I'm not even talking about necessarily the type of fear that's a fist fight. Not that kind of fear even. There could be that, but this is more of the fear of what people are going to think. How are they going to view me? Am I going to be accepted? Am I going to be rejected? And that's a normal fear that can be in any of our hearts, simply wanting to fit into the society around us. But we as believers have to come to a place where we say, you know what? It matters what God thinks. And only what God thinks, not what man thinks. Not that we're intentionally rude or trying to be obnoxious, but simply saying, God, I'm here for you. And I'm going to do what you've asked me to do, and I want to have a fear of you over the fear of man. We saw that with Daniel last week. If you remember, Daniel had been set up. Again, they looked at Daniel, and there was a political thing going on where Daniel was in power over the other leaders there in the Medo-Persian Empire. He wasn't even one of them. He was Jewish. They wanted to bring him down. The king had great favor with him. They found out that he was a faithful man in everything that he did, and they knew if they tried to bring him down simply by his job description or serving this king, they wouldn't be able to find anything. So they said, what can we find? We'll make a law surrounding his God. And they knew that he prayed 3 times a day. They knew that he honored the God of Israel. So they just came up with this story. Let's go to the king and tell the king, hey, nobody can pray to anybody but you for 30 days. You know, flatter the king. He'll sign it. And then we can catch Daniel. Say, look, this guy's praying to his God on a regular basis, and he's not regarding you and all this kind of stuff. So they went. They flattered the king. The king gave in. He signed the decree. And, of course, when Daniel heard that the decree had been signed, that's where we saw in verse 10, he went back and did exactly as he had always done since his early days. In other words, I've been following God my whole life. I'm not going to change it now. And he would open his windows toward Jerusalem. If you remember, that's when Solomon said in his prayer at Jerusalem at the temple, he said, God, if any of our people are outside of Israel, have them, when they turn and face the temple in Jerusalem, hear from heaven their prayer. So he was following that tradition of turning toward Jerusalem. He'd done that his whole life. They knew it. They saw him. They trapped him. They made the law, you know, this kind of thing. And so Daniel has this situation where, as I said, he's faced man, but now he has to face literal lions. I can't imagine living in a government where your penalty might be being fed to the lions. I mean, even today with the death penalty in America and the few places that have it, it's typically something where they put you to sleep or maybe they do electrocute you in some instances, but it's a rather quick thing that doesn't have a lot of discomfort with it, if you will. But this would be something that would be truly horrific. You can imagine wild animals attacking you and tearing you limb from limb. This is what Daniel faced. And so it's one thing to say, all right, I'm going to be bold when it comes to my family or the guys at work, but to be bold when it comes with lions, this is a different level. This is something that God gets us to from a life of commitment to the Lord, and Daniel was at that place. But as I said last week, I want us to take courage. I don't think that any of us in this room are ever going to face a lion's den. Not a literal one anyway. But I know that if we ever have to face something that is dangerous for the Lord's name, God will give us grace. He will give us what we need at the moment. And I know that God gave Daniel what he needed here. So that's where we take up today, God taking Daniel, not only being bold among men, but now having to face the consequences of being bold among men and facing the den of lions. And we take up in verse 11, notice what it says. It says, then these men assembled and they found Daniel praying and making supplication before his God. That is, they were watching. They were spying on Daniel. We know that he prays. We know he does it three times a day, so we're going to spy. So they gathered a group of men, and all day they watched Daniel, and they saw that he prayed three different times with his windows open toward Jerusalem. And we know this was all day because, again, they saw him pray, they're going to say three times, and then we're going to see the next morning they go before the king. So there's actually a morning break here between these verses where they go before the king because we see the king fighting all day to try to save Daniel. So there's this whole episode where they spied for a day. They had all the information they needed. Now they're going to take it to the king. And notice this. This is the next day between verse 11 and verse 12. And they went before the king and spoke concerning the king's decree. Have you not signed a decree that every man who petitions any god or man within 30 days, except you, O king, shall be cast into the den of lions? And the king answered and said, the thing is true according to the law of the Medes and the Persians, which does not alter. Remember, we talked about in Nebuchadnezzar in the kingdom before this, you could change the law. But they could just decide to change it and they'd be fine. You couldn't do that here. It was like literally an act of Congress. You had to go back, had everyone gathered together, had the king sign it again to change the law. So they knew they had the king cornered. They knew they had Daniel trapped. And the king doesn't know yet what they're doing, but he goes, yeah, that's true. This is what we've done. And it doesn't alter. So he's just confirming it. And now they drop the bomb. Look at verse 13. So they answered and said before the king, that Daniel. Now remember, they said that before. Every time they talk about Daniel, that Daniel, you know. There's this sense of animosity toward that Christian, toward that man that's following God, that woman that's honoring God. And we see that today, don't we? I think influenced by the demonic realm and also for those who simply hate the Lord. I think a lot of times people hate Christians and they don't even know why. It's a spiritual thing. You know, we see this with the nation of Israel. There are people today that hate the Jews and they don't know why. Now, there are some that can make an argument in the Middle East. We don't like them because fill in the blank, right? And people can offend each other and wrong each other and all that. But there's this thing where now there's people today that just hate the Jews for no reason. Why? Notice this. It is spiritual. You need to recognize the spiritual realm. And whenever you see things happening that don't make sense and are unreasonable, you know that the enemy's involved. And so here the enemy's involved in this. And so they call him that Daniel, who is one of the captives from Judah, does not show due regard for you, O king, or for the decree that you have signed, but makes his petition three times a day. And that shows they were spying on him and knew he did this three times a day. So again, very clearly, they're trying to bring Daniel down. They're trying to find a way to attack and to destroy Daniel. And again, the Bible says, from the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. And once again, they begin lying. So it shows their hearts are filled with lies. Remember, we said that all of the leaders agree this decree should be signed. Well, not Daniel. And he was a leader over all of them. He was number two behind the king, number three, actually, behind Darius. I mean, behind, you had Darius and Cyrus both as kind of there at the top. So he would have been number three, but either way, they said they all agree. He goes, no, Daniel didn't agree, but he wasn't there at that meeting. So they start out with lying. Now they take the lie farther by saying, you know what? He doesn't give you due regard. He doesn't care about you. Nothing could be farther from the truth. Daniel was a God-honoring, government-honoring man of God. Now, he wouldn't put the government over God. But he was what we'd call today someone who was a good citizen in his society. He didn't cause problems. He loved the king. The king loved him. And we'll see that as the story bears itself out. But again, they're lying about Daniel because they want to make him look as bad as they can. And they're saying, look at this man. Look what he's done. He's disregarded you. And so, and the king, notice this, when the king heard these words, he was greatly displeased with himself. He knew at this moment, I've been had. These guys set me up. I love Daniel. Daniel's a model citizen. Daniel's a faithful counselor. Daniel's a faithful leader in the kingdom. These men have done this to trap Daniel, and right now it's hitting him. It's like, snap, I got taken here. And so, there's nothing he could do. It's too late. You've been backed into a corner, and again, they use flattery to draw him in. Nobody's going to honor anyone but you, O king, for the next 30 days. And now he's kicking himself, going, what have I done? He was greatly displeased. He realized he had put Daniel's life in danger, and probably in his mind, realizing this probably was Daniel's demise. Of course, we know God's going to intervene and not let that happen. But notice this, when he hears this, he set his heart on Daniel to deliver him. And he labored, that is, he put in all the effort that he knew till the going down of the sun to deliver him. No doubt he called in all of his counselors as well as the anyone that could give him insight, that could maybe somehow save Daniel, some other angle that he could get, you know, maybe some other law that he didn't know about, something he wasn't considering. Bring in his lawyers, if you will, to see what they could add to this story. Anyone he could get a hold of to get some insight into how to rescue Daniel. But again, there's going to be no way that he could do this because it was too late and the decree had been signed. But you see his heart for Daniel. He loved Daniel, and so he's laboring to release Daniel all that day. The day ticks by, the sun begins to go down, and now he knows it's time to carry out the judgment. Look at what happens in verse 15. Then these men approached the king, and they said to the king, "Know, O king, that it is the law of the Medes and the Persians that no decree or statute which the king establishes may be changed." In other words, remember, you can't change this. As much as you like Daniel, as much as you know we've now tricked you, we got this law through, it's too late. You can't change it now, and so you've got to follow through. And so the king knew that was true. He knew there was nothing he could do to change this. And so look what happens in verse 16. So the king gave the command, and they brought Daniel, and they cast him into the den of lions. But the king spoke, saying to Daniel, "Your God, whom you serve continually, he will deliver you." Now again, what a statement that he made to Daniel. You know, you wonder, was this God speaking through this king? I believe that it was. Did Daniel recognize that God was encouraging him through this king? You see, at this point, Daniel didn't really know what was going to happen. There's no indication that God had spoken to Daniel in a dream or let him know in any other form and fashion whether or not he was going to be delivered, because here's what we know. Sometimes God delivers out of the lion's den. Sometimes God delivers in the lion's den. Even to Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, God didn't deliver them out of the fire, but he delivered them in the fire and rescued them. But sometimes God allows the fire to consume the believer. There's no guarantees. We look out through world history and the history of the church. There are many instances where believers trusted in God completely and God allowed them to be put to death. So God doesn't always deliver. Sometimes God, again, just gives the grace to go through it for his glory and for a testimony. Sometimes God delivers out of it. And certainly he knew that Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego had been delivered. But God, are you going to deliver me? And I wonder whether or not when the king said that, if it was something where God spoke to his heart and began to give him peace. This is me speaking to you. I'm going to deliver you. And so either way, we know that Daniel would have had great peace knowing that God was faithful. And again, having that testimony of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. You know, what they had been through. You wonder, where were they? It might be that they were already dead. Daniel's now in his late 80s, and a lot of people didn't live to be that age, so they may have already entered the kingdom and been dead at this point. It might be that they were not being spied on and watched. It was Daniel they were trying to pin down, because Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, had they been alive at this time, and we don't know, they weren't in top leadership, we know that. So Daniel was their focus, so we don't know why they were there, why they weren't there, but I have to believe that if they were there, we would have seen them in the story, because they would have been encouraging Daniel. Daniel, you know, God did this for us, God will do this for you, but Daniel knew their testimony. And he knew what they had done. And by the way, that is an encouragement for all of us here today. Looking and hearing the testimonies of those that have gone before us and how faithful God is to supply their needs. God's going to supply our needs as well. Those that God has delivered out of very dangerous and hard situations, God will deliver us as well. And you know what? If not, then we trust the Lord that it's God's plan and he's going to give us the grace to walk through that. I think about Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego again, where they said, you know what? God will deliver us, but if not. And that's that balance of the mature Christian. We realize that sometimes God does deliver from that, completely rescuing us. Sometimes God allows us to go through it and maybe even give our life for that. But the reality is, that's up to God. It goes in line with healing. You know, again, God sometimes heals, sometimes he doesn't. That's up to the Lord. There are those that say that God heals everyone. We don't see that in the Bible. As a matter of fact, we see that Paul cried out to God and said, "God, heal me, heal me, heal me." And for three times, you know, Paul's crying out. And finally, God answered him and said, "No, Paul, I'm not going to heal you." And it wasn't because Paul lacked faith. As a matter of fact, Paul had probably the greatest faith of most any believer that's ever lived. God told him the reason. He said, "Paul, I'm giving you this. I'm not only allowing it, I'm giving you this because I don't want you to become prideful." You see, what God was going to do, God was going to show Paul heaven. Paul saw, no doubt, the angels and the third heaven, the Bible says. Can you imagine seeing that and being able to come back as a man and handle that? There could be a tendency to feel prideful. How many of you guys have been to heaven, right, and come back to tell about it? You know, what have you done? And God said, "Paul, I'm going to use you in great ways, but I've got to keep you humble, so I'm not going to heal you." And it might be that someone here this morning has a situation where God's not healing you, and it's not because God can't. It's not because God doesn't love you. It's because God is doing something deeper in your life. God is working something you may not even understand until the day you enter the kingdom of God, and we need to trust him. And we need to say like Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, Lord, you know, you will deliver me, but if not, I still will not bow to your gods. In other words, you will deliver me, but if not, I will still trust you. I'm not going to believe that you're not faithful, and I'm going to keep my eyes firmly fixed on you. And so this is Daniel again in this position, trusting the Lord and knowing that God's going to deliver him in some form and fashion. I think the king here is giving what I would call hopeful faith when he says to Daniel, your God will deliver you. You know, again, I don't know that he wasn't a believer at this point. I think by the end of the chapter, he is a believer. I think we're going to see in the statement that he makes, he too came to know the Lord. And yet, at this point, he's not, because he refers to Daniel's God as your God. He says, your God will deliver you. He doesn't say our God. He says, your God will deliver you. And so I think, again, there's some hopeful things going on here in the midst of this. And this is, notice then, they cast him into the lion's den. That's interesting. You just kind of get a note. It says, then they took a stone, laid it on the mouth of the den, and the king sealed it with his own signet ring and the signets of his lords, that the purpose concerning Daniel might not be changed. They would put some type of barrier up, and then they would take wax and put it on that barrier and push the king's ring in that wax, and it would seal it to show that it was the king's seal, and if anybody broke it, they're in big trouble. So that was what was going on there. That's the reason they did that. But again, you think about Daniel being thrown in the lion's den. I tried to look up Medo-Persian lion's den. There's not a lot of information out there about lion's dens. But it does appear that probably what it was a big pit that had a rock on the top, an opening on the top, where they would drop them down in there. And of course, you'd put the rock over the top so the lions couldn't jump out, so that the people couldn't get out. But then you think, wait a minute, the lions, what if you open the rock and the lions, they're waiting? By the way, these lions, you have to understand, they were bred to be fierce. They would purposely make them as mean as they could, and then they would feed them less food than they needed to be really happy. So whenever someone got thrown in, it would be this just immediate attack and this ferocious type thing where they would just devour. So you never wanted to get anywhere close to any one of those paws. And I was thinking, how deep was this hole here? You know, I looked up, they did a study on African lions. Now imagine this. People talk about how high people can jump. It's one thing if you're running and you jump, right? Whatever. Try standing just where you are and jump as high as you can. You're not going to jump that high. Now, some people are stronger than others. Professional athletes can jump a little bit higher. But even at that, if you go from the bottom of their shoe down to the ground, jumping straight up without a running go, you're not going to get a whole lot of leap in there, except for the elite athletes. And even that, you're not going to get super, super high. But I found out that lions, if they're standing flat, can jump 12 feet in the air. Think about that. That's 2 feet above the rim. You talk about, without even running go, you talk about Air Jordan, Air Lion. Boom! I mean, they just break the backboard, you know, and they said when they're running, now we think with these guys running, playing basketball, whatever, a lion can go like 38 feet. We're talking like half court type stuff and slam dunking it. So now again, I didn't measure half court, so don't quote me on that. It's probably farther than 38 feet. But either way, the reality is I'm giving you the idea how high they could jump. Why am I saying this? You wouldn't have the pit even probably just 12 feet deep. You'd probably have it 13, 14, 15 feet deep, right? Because you don't want to be throwing the guy in and you become lunch as well. That big paw come up and grab you and pull you down as one of them jump straight up to grab you, whatever. So why am I saying all this? Daniel's in his late 80s. They dropped him probably 13, 14, 15 feet down to the bottom of this lion's den. And we're going to see later on there was no harm to him. Now, again, I don't know that I could drop that far at this age and not have some kind of harm. So you see God already intervening. No doubt when he hit and he found that he wasn't hurt, he realizes that God's already protecting him. And this whole kind of thing as they throw him in there. And I started imagining, what was it like for Daniel when they dropped him in there? Now, again, remember, most people, when they dropped them down in there, they were immediately attacked. And these lions were fighting for the food, as horrible as that sounds. And they weren't fed as well. So whatever hit that ground, they're going to be jumping on and trying to rip to pieces immediately. I tried to imagine, can you imagine Daniel? The king says that to him. He's going, well, my God's going to deliver me or he's not. He hits the bottom. And what does he do? Does he just kind of, no doubt he kind of collapses and he's there while he's on his knees probably praying? Lord, here I am. Whatever you're going to do, you're going to do. And you can imagine that first few seconds kind of wondering, you know, did he open his eyes? Did he have them closed? You're wondering what's going to happen. You hear the noise of the lions walking around and nobody pounced yet. And then you wait about 5 minutes saying, Lord, you know, if this is going to happen, then give me the grace. Lord, I need your strength. You're going to deliver me. Then God, deliver me. I know what my prayer would be, right? 5 minutes goes by, probably seems like about an hour. Can you imagine after about 15 or 20 minutes, this peace that began to come over Daniel's heart? God, you are delivering me from the lions. Just like Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, by now they would have eaten me alive. I would be long gone. You are doing this. When did the angel show up? Did he see the angel? No doubt that he did. But even if he didn't, he knew there was an angel there. He's going to say in a moment that was closing the mouths of the lions. And think about these lions. They're starving to death. And here comes dinner, right? And they can't do anything. I'm sure their stomachs were growling as loud as their mouth would have growled, right? But God didn't allow them to attack. And I wonder how long if they could. Did God just make them all calm? You have all these images. What was it like? I mean, I think I saw one picture where, Daniel was like leaning back, sleeping on one of the lions. I don't know that it was that. But either way, can you imagine realizing my God is now restraining the lions? And the peace that would have come upon Daniel at this point. Yeah, he had to spend all night in there, but no doubt he would have had great rest and peace coming upon him, saying, God, you're doing it. You know, we're going to see in a moment that the king was pacing and restless and worried about everything. Daniel was probably sleeping. You know, the king's pacing, Daniel's sleeping. And isn't that the difference of the believer and the unbeliever when we come to the trials of life? The unbeliever is going to be pacing back and forth. And again, even as a believer, we can have our moments of pacing, can't we? We have our moments of anxiousness or fear or whatever the case might be, but then God gives peace and we find rest. And Daniel now, in the midst of the lion's den, what a picture that is for us as believers, finding the rest of God in the midst of the lion's den, and then him watching that stone put on the top and know that, okay, this is there till morning. We'll see what's going to happen again, very quickly finding the peace of God, but the king not finding it so quickly. Look at verse 18. And the king went to his palace and spent the night fasting, and no musicians were brought before him. I mean, typically the king would have music playing, live music there in the palace, all the food you could imagine for you, your servants, any guests that you would have that would be in there. And so the celebration was no music. Get rid of the food. You know, what's wrong with the king? He loves Daniel. He's worried about Daniel. And, you know, I wonder whether or not he was saying, oh, you know, if you're out there, the God of Daniel, if you can hear me, help him, you know, because he didn't really know God. So he would have been praying to God in that sense. But no doubt was probably crying out to the God of Daniel. We don't know all the details. But notice also his sleep went from him. So he stayed up all night. Now, Daniel may have been up all night praying. We don't know. That certainly paints a more spiritual picture, if you will. But he also would have been not necessarily been unspiritual by getting some rest. He's an older man and he sees God's protection. He has God's peace. And so kind of an interesting picture to think about Daniel sleeping and this man pacing, as we said. But notice he couldn't wait until the morning came. He's excited to see if God has delivered him. So he's up all night long. And notice verse 19, then the king arose very early in the morning, no doubt before the sun even came up. He was anxious. Is Daniel okay? Did his God protect him? So he rose very early in the morning and he went in haste to the den of lions. And notice this as he's approaching what it says here. It says in verse 20, and when he came to the den, he cried out with a lamenting voice to Daniel. Now, what was this voice like? You can only imagine. And the king spoke, saying to Daniel, Daniel, servant of the living God, has your God whom you serve continually been able to deliver you from the lions? Notice that. Has he been able? Yes, he is able. And this is something you guys need to realize. This part of this whole thing was a testimony to the king. It wasn't just for Daniel. It was a testimony to the king, and the way we handle the trials, the way we trust God in the midst of the lion's den is a huge testimony to the world around us, because people are going to say, is his or her God able to help them, able to deliver them? And we need to portray, yes, our God is able and he will. And even if he doesn't, we're still going to serve him and love him.
Thank you for tuning in to today's edition of Come to the Table with Pastor Mark Kirk. Lately, he's been bringing us God's Word from the book of Daniel, where we see how to faithfully serve God and pursue an attitude of hope, even when there seems to be no light at the end of the tunnel. The path to following Christ isn't always clear, and we may sometimes go off on rabbit trails, but we can trust in the provision of God. He walks with us. He doesn't leave us. And like Daniel, we can stand straight and tall in the sovereignty of Jesus. If you're a local of Knoxville or neighboring towns, would you consider joining us for upcoming service? We have a variety of days and times we gather together in worship. All the information, such as service times and where to find us, is online at thewaymedia.net. Being a part of a body of believers is essential for not only strengthening your relationship with Jesus, but also for accountability. We need to be in a community that supports us in chasing after heavenly things and denying worldly temptations. We look forward to personally meeting you and spending time together. Remember, that website is thewaymedia.net. On that same site are links to enhance your faith. and we trust you'll take time to explore each one. Our time is about up for now, but before we go, we want to say thank you for all of our listeners' support of this ministry as we band together in the name of Jesus to bring hope to a dark nation. We also covet your prayers for this ministry so that we can reach as many people as possible. Be sure to listen again as Pastor Mark brings more teaching here on Come to the Table. Come to the Table is a radio outreach ministry of Calvary Knoxville.